Off the Ball Rugby.
Each time Scotland scored a seven-pointer, Ireland responded in an average time span of 5 minutes with 7 points to the row.
Oh, yeah.
3 minutes, 5 minutes and 7 minutes were the tries that came in response to that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hill, 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you are welcome to episode 122 of The Racing Pod on Off The Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, a bit of crack as well. Reminder as well, folks, the full Off The Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts. How are you, Johnny?
I'm very, 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 very well, JD.
How was your Cheltenham, Johnny? Did you enjoy Cheltenham 2026? Was it a good Cheltenham? Was it a successful Cheltenham, do you think?
Kevin Kilbane, our friend, he used to say it was a good thing, but it wasn't a great thing. It was a great Cheltenham. It wasn't a good Cheltenham. It was a great Cheltenham. It was brilliant.
Why?
Financially, I made a hames of it.
I made a hames, my charity bet. I was the night before going to put it all in Gaelic Warrior here, and then I changed my mind. And I still tipped him, and then 5 minutes before the race, I knew he'd win.
Yeah.
I was just in front of the ring 5 minutes before. Nah, he's going to win this.
Yeah, and it was one of those after the fact events. Like, why didn't we just back Gaelic Warrior? It really was.
No, I literally tipped him, and yeah. I didn't put that. And then I napped Eva Luna, who was an on-runner. It just summed up the week. But so we all have those stories.
Well, my nap at the festival drifted out to 10-1, but I ended up putting him in an each way double with the horse. It was going to win me like five figures, but didn't. Just didn't happen at all. And it was all these, like, it was really, it wasn't even a big bet, but it was just at the prices. It was like, this is going to work out to be. And I was dreaming very briefly. I was winning in a bookies in Rathmines, and it was lively. It was like the old Cheltenham. A lot of people there. It was cool watching the last race on the Tuesday. And my tip that day didn't come in. So then I had another way of thinking each way in the Gold Cup anti-post, which came fine. But I did feel as the week went on, JD, and I was saying this on the show, looking at the racing on Friday, like, don't be betting here for the sake of it. These are really tough races, really tough races. And for punters, I felt that was as tough a Cheltenham as you could get. 20-runner novice races, like, to beat the band. Very difficult handicaps in which, if you were siding with Irish horses, you didn't have a good week.
Well, they won the handicaps, Britain 9-3.
Yeah, that I'm not sure about that. There's something about that that just doesn't sit easy.
Is the Irish horse now getting penalised more? But there was some races, like, you'd be thinking, there was some races, though, where Irish horses were put in and didn't stay, or maybe should have been rerouted to other races, I feel. But I almost feel, though, with the quality of Irish racing, I think sometimes the Irish, I mean, I remember Gordon Elliott saying this before the festival, I think the Irish trainers are actually targeting the big ones, to be honest, more than the handicaps as they used to, because that's the quality of the horse we have here. Like, we won the Grade 1 races 10-2.
Yeah.
And William Mullins won 7 of them. Well, like all the championship races were won by Irish horses, including the Stayers Hurdle and the Ryanair, if you want to put them into the championship bracket. I don't. I think the three championship races are the Champion Hurdle, the Champion Chase, the Gold Cup. And all three winners were easy winners.
Yeah.
Lassie Mouth, Illette Etance and Gaelic Warrior. They all bolted up.
Yeah, the only horses in Ireland, I think, that really are laid out for handicaps now at Cheltenham, more or less,
might be the JP ones.
The Fred Winter, really. The odd JP one, but it's like, what horse from Ireland was really like, okay, maybe like McLowry was sort of laid out, didn't win, travelled well, didn't win. Very few horses. You look at the Skelton horses and it's clear as day that they're really being laid out for Cheltenham. But the Fred Winter, that's kind of why I love the race. They have all these plots in it like that. These horses are, they're unexposed.
Was Saratoga laid out?
100%.
Yeah.
And he.
Well, that's grand. I mean, and
it's part of the game.
It's fine because there's no guarantee at Cheltenham, as you saw with the crazy results.
But it's
like Jaguar, you think, oh, Jaguar is laid out, and then one of his.
And that's why I love Cheltenham. You can back a McManus horse at 18 to 1.
But a lot of the McManus horses went out in the market and won.
Yeah.
By the Sea was like, 9 to 1.
I suppose the most obvious one really was Saratoga, who I mean...
Also, he's 4-1, I think,
went out to 10-1, and that was the SP. Yeah. So I suppose my problem is I'd have a bet with the bookmaker who would be on course, and I was probably thinking as the drift was going on, maybe I'll just pull back a bit in this. I do get worried about horses drifting, but the Cheltenham Festival itself was phenomenal.
Like, Why? Because you have been very critical of them the last few years. So what has changed your mood? What's changed your opinion on it?
Where did the field sizes come from? Like, they were just, it was exactly like Cheltenham should be. If you have a horse that's good enough to run at Cheltenham, and the counterpoint would probably be Romeo Coolio, who I really feel Gordon wasn't mad in running them there, but the owners wanted a runner, and it didn't work out Like, that's fine, but they had their day of going to the races with Romeo Coolio. If you, Cheltenham should be the, it should be the literally the Mecca. The Mecca is what, like, where you go to the Mecca or Medina, whatever you want, you have to go there. If you have a runner, go there and make it the brilliant festival that it used to be. And I just felt that the apart from one or two races that were, you were a bit meh, over 4 days was, it was terrific racing start to finish, really competitive. Like, the, I thought the Supreme was just, it was a great start, and the Arkle was a phenomenal race to watch. First two races in the first day were magic to me, didn't have a financial interest in either. And then all the way through, the really, really competitive race.
First two races on the second day I thought were top class races.
Yeah.
The Turners, which King Roscoe Gray won, and then Kitzbühel winning the, that was a brilliant novice chase.
Look at the size of the field. So, you know, this, we, like, you weren't, and as also, JD, there weren't these races where it's like the favourite's going to win that. There were hardly any races where I was overly confident that horse will definitely win. There weren't that many odds on shots. Was it day one 2 years ago where you had, I think, 3-4 odds on shots in the one day, which culminated in Ilete Tom's disappointing that day at 2-9. Whatever it was about Cheltenham this year, people just seem to want to have runners in it. Massive fields in the novice races. That really struck me. And even in the Triumph, despite the fact that Fred Winter was oversubscribed, the Triumph had a huge,
like an old Triumph, really.
It was like an old Triumph. Yeah. I don't know what happened. It was like as if Cheltenham convinced people to come racing. And I spoke to people who were at Cheltenham. You were obviously there. Was the price of the pint like 7.25? Not bad. Like, really, Cheltenham are doing their best. The cost of accommodation is obviously a big deal. But ultimately, I feel people who went for the 3 days and would have done it religiously, it's hard to go for 4 days. It's a long week. I wasn't there, but I love Cheltenham from start to finish.
Put on your headphones there, because last November, Patrick Mullins, assistant trainer to Willie, and obviously top amateur jockey, Grand National winning jockey, was in studio with us on the Racing Pod, and we asked him for the main horse to follow for the season. Maybe an obvious one. Give us an obvious horse to follow for the,
yeah, well, look,
the casual listener.
I think Gaelic Warrior has a great chance to go cup. I think, right. I think he's much more mature and settled now. I think going up in triple will help him. And look, Galloping Sham sets the standard, but Gaelic is just a little bit younger. And, he's probably going to go via the King George. And, yeah.
Telling the future back in November, 16-1 he was at the time. Exactly what he said happened.
It was a very, very curious week or two for P.W. Mullins, who thinks I'm going to be riding Gaelic Warrior in the Gold Cup. And then, what is it, the Friday before Cheltenham, I think it was the Friday or the Saturday, I was at Gorn. Yeah, it was the Friday, because I remember talking to Willie Mullins about on Saturday, Galloping Deschamps out the Gold Cup. And I was saying to Willie Mullins, there's a clip of Rodney Trotter, like, basically having mock, I'm absolutely fine, not worried at all, not sad at all about this, and he starts crying. And I was saying to him, this is going around, this is Patrick Mullins when he's told he's not riding Gaelic Warrior. And basically you're feeling, Patrick must be thinking, oh my God, like, I was really looking forward to riding this horse. But then you wonder, JD, would he have won under Patrick Mullins? I don't know. I just don't know. Like, and I'm not here to talk about jockeys, because I'm not a jockey and I'm not a great judge of a jockey. But Paul Townend was superb on the horse, and he's not the most straightforward ride.
I think Patrick would have won on him.
Yeah,
he won the Bow last year on him.
He was brilliant on him at Aintree. Yeah,
he won the Grand National last year. He won the first race of 50-1. I think Patrick would have won on him. But I suppose the one thing with Paul Townend, you were probably guaranteed the way he was riding out of his skin, that he would get Gaelic Warrior settled. And obviously he's a professional jockey, Patrick's an amateur. But it was a one-horse race.
Yeah.
It was a one-horse race.
Mm. It was a one-horse race. Like, I don't think it was a vintage Gold Cup in some ways. Like, I know the way you're thinking, apparently, I don't know if he were even in great form at Cheltenham. There was no support, no confidence behind him on the day. Django Bay probably ran his race, but the rest of them were... Now, the Gold Cup, it makes horses run badly, because you have to... The likes of... Yeah. I mean, if you inject pace into a Gold Cup like that on what was very decent grounds, you're going to get basically exposed in terms of not having the class. Haiti Couleur, for example. I couldn't get over the price of the Jukebox Man. Like, I really couldn't.
I thought he was a non-stayer.
Ah, like,
but I don't think he was at his best.
Maybe he wasn't. Yeah, he might have had an excuse as well. But, like, there were horses. It was one of those races. I didn't fancy the British in it. I genuinely didn't. But I do wonder if Gaelic Warrior, he just has too much class for those horses when he gets it right. But for a horse with so much ability over 2 miles to win a Gold Cup like that, evoke memories for me of Kodo Star.
Yes, and to be fair to Richie, Susanna Richie, they put a lot of money into the game, so well done to them as owners. Five eye catchers from Cheltenham. We asked you, Johnny, to do some upper while. Yeah, I've done some myself. So who was your first eye catcher?
I was in, these aren't really in any particular order, but I was in Mallow yesterday and I was doing a bit of research and I was like trying to figure out if I spoke to a jockey, how did he or she get on at Cheltenham? And he or she probably only had one or two rides. I think Jody Townend had one ride in the bumper, ran well. Anna McGuinness's horse, I was looking up, was like Jump Alain in the Martin Pipe. Very, very eye-catching. Really, like, probably should have won. Not only the traffic that the horse met coming to the last, but what happened at the last would go down as quite an unlucky loser. So that's my number one. Winston Jr. in the race was won by Saratoga. I felt he ran extremely well. Saratoga, if you were ever hoping for, if you're ever on a horse in a race, like he, everything went right for him. He was in the right place. He jumped. The ground was right. He stayed up the hill. He's a good horse, this fella. He was well handicapped. But Winston Jr. emerged with massive credit. I think he was favourite for the Fred Winter after he beat Genealogy. Where was that race? I tipped Genealogy here and he was second and he was a non-runner at Mallow yesterday for Justin Carty. Very interesting horse going forward. Winston Jr. destroyed him that day and he ran really well and now he deserves to step up to grade one company now. Cabral de Matan, I mean, I don't know what price he went.
Could he be a horse for the Aintree Hurdle maybe?
100%. Like, that's your thinking. I'm not even sure it was 100% stamina.
He really ran in the stairs.
He looked, I mean, I tipped up Bob Ollinger, who actually ran very well. And I don't think
strange
it was,
race, though.
Yeah, it was a funny race. I don't think it was really a race necessarily that suited Bob Ollinger in a way, because it became a bit of a, it became quite an aggressive race from two out. But that, everyone was, if, well, I mean, your eye had to be drawn to Cabral de Matan. Now, I wasn't surprised he didn't get home, but I was surprised at how he stopped. But the way he travelled in the race, saw a load of ability. Salver then is my fourth one. Salver, another horse who just looks kind of on the up, and sometimes you're speculating a bit, but he did get a kick at the start. He was one of those many horses who wore a hood, who actually have had a bad record at Cheltenham, the horse who wore a hood to start. He was kicked and he ended up beaten three lengths by Kit Spuhl and ended up being beaten over just over two lengths by Final Demand. Oscar's Brother was fourth. Now is the hour. What did I tip in that race? Oh, Romeo Coolio. But this is a good renewal of the race, and he ran really well from off the pace. And my final pick of the five then is My Daddy Paddy, who I felt emerged great credit, really got his reputation back where it was prior to his defeat the last day. And it was a remarkable supreme in that all of the fancied horses were British trained on the day. The Irish horses were just dead in the market. And this is why I love betting and horse racing, because JP McManus is literally on ITV telling, I think it was Rishi Prasad, Willie said, whatever race he wins in, he will win. And he was 7-1 at the time. And his market, the market barely moved. He was friendless. And JP wasn't lying.
Who's this?
Sorry, that was Mighty Park. Mighty Park. JP McManus saying, whatever race Mighty Park will run in, he'll win. This is 10 minutes before the Supreme. He barely moved in the market. All of the money was for the British horses. And they were the first three home. And as much as the winner, Old Park Star, is this most beautiful model of a horse, My Daddy Paddy's going to be very, very good. I could see him winning the Arkle or running well in it next year.
Johnny Ward's five eye catchers from Cheltenham are...
Who would have thought it? Four British trains! Would you Adam and Eve it?
Johnny Ward's five eye catchers from Cheltenham are Jump Alain, Winston Jr., Cabral de Matan, Salver and My Daddy Paddy. John Duggan's five eye catchers from Cheltenham are Jump Alain even. First run of the season, fast finishing third in the Martin Pipe. You'd have to think this horse is going to be one for the spring festivals now. Over 2.5 miles, if we see him again.
It's funny if it were your, and I don't, you know, it shouldn't be, there shouldn't be anything like a get out race, but if that were your get out horse for the festival, you would have felt a bit hard done by.
The second one was Search for Glory. Thought he ran noticeably well in the Ultima Handicap Chase, travelled very well and unshipped to the last. Probably would have been placed.
Yeah.
Follow him in the Michael Leary colours for Gordon Elliott going forward. King Rascal Grey, I thought, was the most impressive winner at the festival. I thought he tanked through the race, a really hot renewal of the Turners and Offices hurdle. And then I was down at the final hurdle, and then he just stormed up the hill. It was only his fifth run of his life. I think this horse could be a real star in the William Mullen Stable next year. King Rascal Grey, an 11-1, probably the better of the meeting in hindsight, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. Oscar's Brother, I picked as well. Like, I think he needed softer ground and a longer trip. He's 8 years of age now. He's a very good horse. I think he could be a horse for the Nationals. Maybe a bit inexperienced for those races, but a good staying on fourth in a good race. And they are four. And the last one, Johnny, is a horse that didn't even run there. Leader Dallier. Patrick Mullins came in here in November, wasn't spoofing, obviously, gave us a dark horse to follow for the season, and he said Leader Dallier. He told you as well for the currency, Leader Dallier.
Come to Punchdown fresh.
The horse didn't run at Cheltenham. Obviously, he's well thought of in the yard. And look at the way King Roscoe Gray performed. So on that basis, you got to follow Leader Dallier wherever he goes.
True. That was the one disappointment on day one, was that he was scratched. He was my selection in the Supreme. Who knows how he would have run?
Yeah, I think he probably would have run pretty well. Look, William Mullins is still the king, isn't he?
Yeah, and like the one thing with Willie Mullins is that he still loves Cheltenham, and this he's never deviated from that. He ran so many horses there. Like, if they had any sort of a chance,
yeah, that fact of Fall story to me, I think, was overblown story.
How do you mean?
Just feel, well, Willie had an opinion on the ground, the owner had an opinion on the ground, and it's not going to stop Willie Mullins coming to Cheltenham with horses in the future, in my view. I just think it was one of these. So many interviews done. Like, I interviewed Willie Mullins three times. You're being dragged from pillar to post. You've got runners in every race. You're asked for an opinion in front of a TV camera. And I think that...
Yeah.
I think that's... People going, oh, my God. Like, oh, it's, you know, the ground. And there's a lot of industry analysis of things that is not completely in any way released to the public. And that's why I knew when that Queeley de Boinville story happened, oh no, this is going to be a big now national story in the UK. And it's back page of the UK Times because of what was alleged. And obviously now, Nicola de Boinville, there's no evidence. BHA didn't uphold the claim and the complaint this week. So
I spoke to trainers at the races, and also, like, Martin Hassett's interview at the Kerr on Sunday was very interesting. There was definitely a belief among some of the Irish connections that the ground was close to good.
I spoke to Darragh O'Keefe after Hartwood won on the Thursday, said it was soft side of good, and he was covered in mud.
Yeah, but that covered in mud doesn't mean, I mean, that could be just on the top and kick back. But what for me is strange is that, to the best of my knowledge, Cheltenham has had plenty of rain this year. Like, it does.
It drains very well.
It drains very well. And the week before the racing, I'm not here to criticise ground staff. If ever there were an impossible job, like trying to, you can't predict the weather.
If you water and then it rains, yeah, it'll ruin the ground.
I do feel with jumps racing, you should definitely err on as an ally of softer ground rather than it being a bit too quick. Now, the problem for the race course here is that you can't 100% predict how much rain is going to fall. Weather can be extremely localised, and this is getting more of a thing where there could be, literally in Harold's Cross, it could be bucketing down, and here we miss it. So the ground staff have a tough choice, but there were too many Irish people, even Philip Fenton, not critical, but he's just saying that's their ground description is more on the good side for them. And Martin Hassett was saying it, JP McManus, and I have to laud JP McManus and Willie Mullins. So JP McManus was left with one horse in the Gold Cup, one horse who had a sporting outside chance, and he looked after the horse's welfare in the instance of Spillane's Tower and in the instance of
Factofile.
And JP McManus is 75 years of age, and you see people who are not of a good mindset, and the older they get, the less they care about everyone else. He's not like that with his racehorses. He genuinely won a couple of Gold Cups, but he looked after the welfare of the racehorse on the day, and I think that means a lot. And Jimmy Mangan, I'm sure, was gutted not to have a runner in a Gold Cup that he definitely had a chance in.
I think they're going to run it in the National now.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's ground. I don't know. Entry could be quicker again, and that's fine. You can't say the ground should be this, the ground should be that. But I feel that the Factofile decision was made, presuming that was the ground related issue. That was fine. They had the horse interest.
I just find it's just funny because back in the 90s, Cheltenham was run on much faster ground than it was last week. It was run on good to firm ground, like when Mr. Mulligan won the Gold Cup 1997, 2000. It looked like trouble. This was good to firm ground. Irish horses were all taking their chances because they all needed to win, and they weren't winning. Like, Doran's Pride went to Cheltenham so many years, the ground was never suitable for him.
Yeah,
and it cost him. Let's look ahead then to this weekend's action, Johnny. So Navan on Saturday, we have a quite expensive race. A 35 grand race for an Irish Stallion Farms EBF Novice Handicap Chase Final over about 3 miles, a listed race here. So the first question is, if Gordon Elliott's got two runners in the race, why is Jack Kennedy riding for Peter Fahey on Corey Starr?
Yeah.
Gringo Dobrell reopposes, won the horse you tipped before in the handicap hurdle at the course back in December when it won.
I think I tipped him when Jack rode him in Navan as well, and he was he just faded, which was completely out of kilter with when he beat Corey Starr, who reopposes here in a hurdle race. And maybe I'm speculating here, but maybe Gordon Elliott is just like, keep Michael Kennelly on him for his £5 claim. Yeah. And as you say, it's funny to see Jack riding Corey Starr, because obviously Jack, he has ridden him a couple of times, ridden against Corey Starr. Or certainly knows the horse, but when I went into this race initially, Tom Malone tipped up Built by Ballymore as, I think he tipped him at Punchestown when he ran very well. This is a horse that was he favoured for the Coral Cup, favoured for a good race at Cheltenham not that long ago, and he's obviously the Ballymore connections of his owner, Sean.
Could have won the Leinster National there.
I watched back the race today, and I actually feel he might still have won the race, but okay. his jumping was a little bit kind of erratic the last couple of fences. Gavin Bruder rode him, and he jumped out to his left. But I look at Show Your Appreciation, JD, and I'm just like, this horse is just, it's just very, very hard to take him on. I tipped him up two runs back against Ney. Now, that was a race in which Gringo Dobrell was favourite under Josh Halford, because he was back off his lower chase mark and he fell, and he's not the best jumper of a fence. But Show Your Appreciation was quite well backed and bolted up. Then he ran over hurdles at Navan, over 2.5, and I opposed him with Chosen Diamond at the prices, thinking, you know, there might be an angle to take them on here. He bolted up again. So he just looks like he's absolutely in the form of his life. Perfect. And I like the fact that he's coming back to Navan. It looks like this was a plan. And there should definitely be a pace to sit off in the race. And Mark Walsh rides again. I find him, you know, he might be done by something better handicap, but I just find him very, very hard to oppose.
A rocket there has won 2 in the bands. Mm. Magic McCaughan running over a furthest distance he's ever faced for Willie Mullins. Nelson County might be better back in trip. Maxima Gold has been inconsistent. Competitive race, though, for 35 grand.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that it's EBF funded and it's good prize money, but it is a good race and a good betting race with your 12 runners and nearly everything in with some sort of a chance as well. And I suppose if Mark Walsh had won disappointing ride at Cheltenham, it was Majbury. I think that race was a bit of a mess, really, in many respects, but he's had an 99 out of 100 season, I suppose.
Newbury on Saturday, they're running a bumper, a Goff's 100 grand bumper, 335. They're catching on to bumpers now across the way.
Yeah, I imagine this is some sort of Goff's incentive race, and these races look a bit too good to be true at times, because often, like the Goff's Million, it's cost a lot of money to actually have a runner in it, and you're kind of thinking, why isn't there an Irish horse running in this race?
Well, there is,
Padraig Roach's, but you know, why isn't there a horse with form? And I'm not really sure why, because 100 grand, 65 grand sterling is serious money for a bumper, and our prize money isn't good. So Paddy Roach going over fresh from Saratoga, having booked Anya O'Connor on She Acts Like Summer, is very interesting. The horse has been nibbled at as well.
About 16 to 1, is it 18?
Yeah, 18 to 1 here. I'm going to go with Dan Skelton here. Diamond Street beat Elderflower Tonic in a bumper in Doncaster in January, and Elderflower Tonic was not a hugely expensive horse, but a relatively expensive horse after winning a four-year-old point-to-point. And I imagine it's quite well-regarded. And this horse really bolted up. That did 34 lengths back to third. And it's not that easy to weigh up the form, but there's no doubt this horse is above average. And Diamond Street, I mean, what can you say about the form of the yard? So Diamond Street for me, but it's a race that you couldn't be that overly comfortable with Anton in it.
Was a wide margin winner, as was Keltype last time out for Rebecca Curtis. And also one to look at is Sean Bowen's mount, Madam Speaker, second for Nicky Henderson in the, is it the Heichler stud? Mm. Generally like last time out winners and bumpers or progressive types that haven't had many runs, unexposed types. So Madam Speaker maybe each way for me, about 7.5 to 1.
Four-year-old filly for me would do extremely well to win that, older horses, even getting weight. Her sire Harzand has done really well, but she is, as you say, JD, she's getting a lot of weight.
Yeah, it's a weighing scales, isn't it? Sunday, we have the Madrid handicap, 347. Ryan Moore riding Causeway for Aidan O'Brien. I went through the field here. There's only really.
And you came back to Causeway.
Yeah, and the other one, the only other one that was noteworthy was Cote Lights Fitness from a run in Newcastle and Oisin Murphy coming over to ride. So they're the only two that stood out for me in this one at all.
Aidan had a stable tour visit the other day and I couldn't go, well, I didn't go in the end. I just kind of another thing on, and which ended up being cancelled. And I had this real feeling of regret that I wasn't there.
You'd FOMO.
I had, because like it's. This time of year is such a beautiful time to see a horse in training. See the 2-year-olds, who almost all of them haven't run yet. In fact, Aidan hasn't had a 2-year-old runner yet. And see the glint in his eye, maybe, if he's talking about. He's talking about Albert Einstein. You know, I'm not sure about him getting the Guinness trip, but like that, it's just to be in Ballydoyle on a nice morning. I was kind of annoyed I didn't go. And I would have asked him maybe about a horse to follow and whether he would have given Causeway or not, I don't know.
Did you read... the review or the anything that you picked out of it?
I haven't read everything yet. Like what he said about Albert Einstein was definitely interesting. Like if he, you know, we're not really going to get him off the bridle at home to see how he gets on in the guineas, and he's one of those horses, a bit like One Cool Cat, who might end up back sprinting. But I mean, I think he'll be probably better than One Cool Cat. But Causeway, I love the Madrid handicap. It's just like a 3-year-old handicap early in the season has produced classic winners in the shape of Paddington and Autad, and maybe more actually in recent years. But like, which is unusual that you'd start off in a handicap. But Causeway has a lot going for him. His full sister was third in the Oaks last year at a big price. And, you know, we're very lucky in some respects, Judy. I look at newspapers now and I wonder, like, why do they do all the things they've been doing forever? Why have they all these match reports? And why have they all these reports of racing the day before, when in the old days they were reporting to people who didn't see the race or couldn't see it? Whereas now we can see everything. Like, so I can look back on Causeway's last two runs in a heartbeat. And you look back on the win at the Curragh, the form has worked out really, really well. And Wayne Lorden said afterwards, and I really like this on IrishRacing.com or the Racing Post, where it has a log of connections saying afterwards, and basically Wayne Lorden said, big horse, laid back. That's what you want late in, 2-year-old. I think he was looking for company at the end. In other words, he'd more in hand than met the eye. Ryan Moore rides top weight, but he looks to me, he's definitely a stakes horse and a handicap. William Hill's price, 3-1. Have to say now, sometimes I come on here, I'm like mad confident. There's no way that horse will go off 3-1. He'll definitely go off shorter. I'm not saying that's the case here because it's his first run. Who knows what's going on over the winter? But I'd be wagering this horse is well handicapped, and a brilliant renewal of the Madrid.
The Voice Stakes of 4:22 Nation Sunday on the Racing Shoal sets the standard for Johnny Murtagh. Won a Curragh handicap and a Lister race at Leopardstown in the autumn. Rabi won the Lincolnshire last weekend, so it's obviously fit. Sun Charts won the race the last couple of years. Bassett won a listed race at the Curragh last year. That's four of them.
Yeah, I remember back in Ribby at Goran off 75 in October, and I was on a bad run. I hadn't had a bet in a while. I was just like not really punting, and I remember having a good bet each way on that. And it was a 16-runner handicap. It's a nice race, and I was like, I was delighted it won, and it was a nice win. Little did I know he would go on to win 3 on the bounce and come in here rated 98 and be good enough to have a chance to win in a listed race. So delighted for Mick Mulvaney. He's always good for a word at the races. I'm going to take him on with Iowa City here, who I feel is interesting. Paddy Toomey got this horse, was in France, third at Killarney, first time in a decent race. What was, I suppose, strange, JD, was when the horse won at Galway, he was 18-1. It was a rated race, and I don't know why the horse is that big in a 12-horse race, but 18-1, you know, Paddy Toomey horses very, very frequently go off short. And then at Cork last time, 11-2, was quite eye-catching, flashed home in third after not getting a clear run. And I feel there could be more upside in this horse. 13-2 with Hills. Each way if there are three runners.
We got Sam Norris and William Hill on the line. How are you, Sam?
I'm very good, chaps. Yeah, you?
Yeah, good, Sam. I saw you in the distance at Cheltenham. How many millions or billions did the bookies make?
It was a good week, yeah. We're actually slightly behind after the Tuesday, which seems incredible to think now. But yeah, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday to a lesser extent went really well from our point of view. The worst winner of the entire week was Supremely West. So, you know, when your big loser in the week was in a handicap in the pretense, you know you've had a reasonably good week as a bookmaker. But yeah, other than the skeleton horses and the handicaps, it was a good week for the layers, yeah. But yeah, an enjoyable time. I assume you chaps enjoyed yourselves as well.
I backed Supremely West basically on the chance of, again, this just looks like it, you know, and but unfortunately I put in an each way double again
with
the horse Jericho de Rapine, who bombed. So the two really good winners I had in the week, and that was just a kind of a, I'm looking at this and Dan Skelton has the horse laid out. But I'll put it to you, Sam. If Cheltenham were like this every year with the field sizes that they had, like, bookmakers would become almost more interested in racing again, because, like, this was a bookies festival for me. Like, it was very, very hard as a punter. You're going through these races. First of all, a lot of people betting on Cheltenham don't know anything about horses. So, obviously, they're going to struggle to...
Well, then we have the Slade Steel disaster.
But Slade Steel, so the three of us napped the horse and he's unplaced. But there was this, the field sizes, Sam, the difficulty of the races for me, it was like, as a bookmaker, approaching day three and four, I'm in a good place here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can afford to get a little bit aggressive once you come to that point. You know, we had two epic boosts every single day at the festival. Come the end of the week, you know, we were able to, as I say, get a little bit aggressive, push a bit more out. And I think, you know, the dearth of real short ones that people want to put in the multiples this year was a massive positive. Most years, you know, there's a clear treble or a fourfold that emerges almost each day of the week. The only day that we had that was anything like that really was the Thursday. Bambino Fever would do, and Factor File. Obviously, Bambino Fever got turned over in the first. Would do did the business. Then Factor File didn't end up running in the Ryanair. But that was the only kind of semblance of that kind of banker acca, banker treble that punters wanted to be on. Competitive field sizes, great books, bigger prices. I was speaking to one of our traders actually a couple of weeks ago about the Gold Cup market, and he said at the moment the book resembles a Grand National book because the money is so well spread. If every race was like the Grand National, we'd be on some kind of desert island at the moment sipping Dom Perignon. But that's a bit of an example as to just, you know, how competitive the field sizes were this year and how vast the money was spread. And we like to see a good spread of the money as a bookmaker.
If I wasn't working, I would have made money at Cheltenham this year, and I would have made money laying horses. Would have laid the Jukebox Man all day. Would have laid Mashbra. Would have laid Bambino Fever.
And you were against Mashbra, yeah.
Would have just, I would have laid three horses the week and made money.
I don't buy this if I weren't working though, JD. I mean, there are many hours in the day. You have to compartmentalize.
You're working 15 to 18 hours a day.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
You're not going to see things. More chance of tipping winners on this slot, to be honest. What about this weekend, Sam? Anything that's, you know, a real highlight for you? Is it the bumper at Newbury? Is it the nice flat on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, both of them really. You know, the 100 grand bumper obviously at Newbury is going to be an interesting race. It's a rarity that, you know, we would have a bumper as one of the features of the day, but you're getting a lot of trainers who kind of eyeballed this. I know Harry Derham has had this in mind for Lover des Bois for a while. At Diamond Street, obviously tops the betting at 5-2. Dan Harry Skelton won this last year, and Diamond Street just, you know, powered away at Doncaster on debut, looking like a nice horse. It's a chance we can play an extra place in the race. We're going four places at a quarter as standard. That's notwithstanding the each way extra markets as well. So an opportunity for each way punters, perhaps. We've laid a bit of Bailey's Comet, 10-1 into 7-1. Harry Cobden could be an interesting jockey booking there. There's a couple of horses we wanted to keep on side at bigger prices. One of them is No Way Jay. You can completely forget his run last time around, just went horribly wide round the bend and ended up tailed off. Now, that did come here at Newbury, so has got to navigate the bend a little better today. That's on the board at 18-1. And Callisto Queen was another one we wanted to keep on side. I think she could come on from her Warwick fourth on debut. And I wouldn't mind the inside line if there is one, or the vibes over in Ireland. She acts like summer. Fascinating that Padraig Roach has got one in here with Anya O'Connor booked, and 20s into 16s, I think, maybe back out to 18s now. But a debutante, are there any lively whispers? Is there confidence?
Well, it's not going there for nothing, surely.
Yeah, well, I tell you one, like, Paddy Roach is Christy Roach's son, and Paddy is a man who doesn't say a lot in interviews. I think he's very, very shrewd, and I'm not sure he'd... He's quite coy, like, so you have to kind of read between the lines. But it was interesting after Saratoga how emotional he was. Like, what Cheltenham what Cheltenham can do to a man or a woman, and he obviously trained the half brother Brazil to win the race. But partly the reason, Sam, I fancied Saratoga was Porrick Roach trained him. And I was like, as a target trainer, this guy is very, very sharp. Didn't lick it from the stone, proverbially, but I'd look at it as a the fact that she's
each way race.
Well, she's gone over here, and, you know, in terms of not having not run at all before, This doesn't qualify as black type, so I'd say they must reckon that she's a chance of at least running well, because if I'm looking as a trainer here, you don't overface a horse first time out. Like, there's not anything to be gained by this horse having a hard race first time, unless she's capable of winning some prize money. So I'd respect her, but very tough task here.
What about this? You'd quarter the odds of races at Cheltenham. Will this continue, Sam, for the Aintree Festival maybe, or other festivals?
Yeah, very much so. We're always, looking at kind of ways that we can enhance the each way product. The general way of doing that is just adding more places, but we're enhancing the fraction on selected races, through the course of the weekend. So it won't always be a case of we're offering X number of places. Sometimes it'll be the fraction that's enhanced. And obviously a quarter of four places as standard in that bumper tomorrow, we think are pretty attractive terms. And it's a bit of a throwback, isn't it? It used to be, even when I first got into betting, it was always quarter of the odds, wasn't it? There was no 50 odds.
One of the worst things
times
that ever happened.
Times have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The industry, to be honest.
To be fair.
Just in betting or in general?
In general, Sam, everything's about betting. But to be fair, a quarter of the odds, for all races, or 50 odds, some races, it's just anachronistic. It doesn't work for bookmakers. Some races, they have to make a 10-1 shot, 3-1. So it doesn't necessarily work. But the point of it now is that if you're a customer and you're looking at Cheltenham and you look at the various bookmakers, the customer is getting a lot of different options. Like William Hill going a quarter of the odds for certain races at Cheltenham, that's a great offer. You don't have to back each way, but I like backing each way. And I sound like Jack Charlton here. I like fish and chips. The players like fish and chips. I like backing each way. And if you can get a quarter of the odds and you can avail of extra places, it's just part of the having different options as a punter.
I'm delighted.
That's cool. I'm having that one. Finding JD.
What about Nice then on Sunday? Any moves at all? Probably very early, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, we're first up with these races. So obviously prices very much subject to change once we see how the market develops. But Causeway, obviously, you guys mentioned. I mean, we actually stuck him out at 11-4 originally. We've eased him out to 3-1 now. Anything Aidan O'Brien runs in a handicap is always somewhat interesting. They're obviously not really in the business of having handicappers in the yard. But this, as Johnny pointed out earlier on, is a bit different to your traditional handicap. You have some smart horses in this. We're always wanting to know at this stage of the season how far forward Aidan O'Brien's runners are. So this might give us a little guide into that. The horse that we've just taken a little bit of money for in the race, though, early doors, is Breaking Dawn, who's 8-1 into 7-1. Might have a bit of a fitness edge on some of these, having won at the Curragh on opening day last week in the first time cheap pieces. So the money for that one is a little interesting for sure with Colin Keane booked. Obviously, Sheen Murphy goes out to ride for Adrian Keatley aboard Katai Lights. That one's on the board at 15-2. But yeah, Breaking Dawn, the mover in the Madrid handicap, which is another extra place race here as well, paying 4 and a 5th this time around with the each way extra markets on top of that. And as for the listed race, the 422, yeah, Shaul's been the most popular of the lot, 2-1
right
into 15-8. Looked a very progressive horse at the back end of last season. Sunchart's probably going to have his backers, having won this for the last 2 years. He is a 9-year-old now, but he's won this at 5 and 6-1 in the last 2 years. He's 5-1 again. I don't know if it's any tougher than last year, but he might not be quite as good as he was. Some of his jumps form, though, last season is interesting. He ran a cracker in the Grimes hurdle behind Jesse Evans. He then took in the Galway hurdle after that, maybe a little bit outclassed in that company. But he usually wins this and then wins a hurdles race at Wexford a couple of months after Sunchart. So we'll see if he ships up there then. But a great dual-purpose horse for Andrew Slattery. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's a popular enough one on the day, just given his, clear liking for the course and distance this time of year, this race, etc.
Limerick on Sunday, the 402 is the Hugh McMahon Memorial Novice Chase, Grade 3. Seems to be between You Ought to Know and You Have Me in Stitches. I'd be going for the mare here because she received £7 and she ran well behind the Big Westerner at the track at Christmas.
Anyone get the reference from the Mullins horse, what song this is named after? What song?
You Ought to Know.
Yeah.
By Now?
No.
Robert Palmer, no?
Robert Palmer, that reminds me of something else, but it's an album that was, I want to say, brought out in 1998, Alanis Morissette.
Right.
You Ought to Know. Great album.
It's ironic, isn't it?
You haven't, that's, Sam's too young for this.
Yeah.
He's just listening to two old men talking to themselves here. But You Ought to Know.
Do you use it well, you two, actually?
I'm here to remind you of the mess you left when you went away. And we've left plenty of messes, and then the betting rings over the years. But I would be against that horse here with with the mare. Yeah, like she hasn't necessarily proven her stamina either. I'm in Limerick on Sunday.
She's only had 9 runs in her life.
Out of Blue Sea Cracker.
She's one to follow, I think, going forward.
Yeah, like she's out of... I mean, I think when Blue Sea Cracker won the National, if I remember that day, it was a slog. Even if it weren't, she should stay 3 miles. Yeah. And you ought to know for me, it's been very disappointing.
5.12 is the bumper, the champion bumper. Patrick Muddin's riding Brady Hartsfield for John McConnell. Second on debut at Punchestown. Apache Park has finished second 3 times. Cinatine has the top connections behind it. And Cool Cafe bounced back to win nicely at Nace last time out. That's a good race.
Yeah, I remember that Brady Hartsfield race. I actually backed the winner, who was 15-2. And I took on Brady Hartsfield thinking, I can't see this horse getting home on pedigree. And very much got home. Looks quite promising. Basically was all over the winner that day. I was very, very lucky. Really intriguing runner, and PW riding for John McConnell. And then I like this 4-year-old bumper, produces some good horses year after year. And because I suppose some of them kind of flatbred, but Cinnating, very nice run at Leopardstown as well. Could be quite interesting. Intriguing little race.
Okay, so just before we go, Sam, was there any eye catcher from Cheltenham that you put in the notebook?
Yeah, a couple of them. I mean, I won't patronise the viewers too much by mentioning Jump Allen, who I think everybody saw in the Martin Pipe. Done no favours at the start, hampered during the race, ran on very well into third. So he's obviously quite an obvious one. I thought Ballyburn ran well in the stayers. He looked like he was travelling all over them, ran at the back of Cabral de Matan, and then he's ended up on the opposite side of the track to where he was, suggesting he's hanging in the closing stages. And my only thing with him, I don't know if he was definitely closing on home by the lead, but nonetheless, I thought it was a good run from him. And probably the biggest one I'm taking away from the week was Manella Study in the Triumph, who I thought emerged with enormous credit, actually headed the eventual winner at one stage, was hampered by that rival in the closing stages of the race. That probably cost him second. Look, he's trained by Adam Nicol. It's a small northern yard, which probably meant he was a bigger price than he ought to have been on form that day. Whether it'll be missed in the market next time, I'm not so sure. But I don't think we saw an outstanding 4-year-old hurdler last week. I don't think there's a clear superstar.
Saratoga, son! What more does he need to do? This horse is going to be... I mean, I wouldn't be amazed if he won a champion hurdle someday.
Patrick Mullen's horse to win on his first start in the UK or Ireland was impressive now. I'd be following him. But we got to take your charity bet now, Johnny. 50 euro on the nose or 25 each way?
Let's see. We'll go 50 euro on the nose on Somersby Roost, the 2:32 at Navan tomorrow. Somersby Roost. I guess we'll have to go with SP there. Yeah, that's fine. Somersby Roost, 50 euro on the nose, 2:32 Navan.
Okay, so this is the 2 mile mare's handicap hurdle. And the horse you've gone for, Johnny, is number 8, Somersby Roost, 50 on the nose. Philip Enright riding for Oliver McKiernan. Any reason?
Oliver McKiernan's gone from no winners in a year to 3 in the space of a few days, and this horse attracted the attention of the stewards last time in what looked a 2-horse race at Leopardstown. Lots to like.
Okay, Somersby Roost, number 8 in the 2:32 even at Navan on Saturday is the charity bet. Sam Narson, William Hill, thanks so much.
Cheers, guys.
And that was episode 122 of the Racing Pod. Thank you, Johnny.
Cheers, Eddie.
Reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your pods. We'll be back next week. We look forward to having your company then.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.